This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You're on Joy 94.9 at Sunday Arts Magazine with Brendan Bale and David Hunt. Welcome. Wow. And hello, Brendan.
Hello, David.
Now that
pleasure
was the,
to be back again.
Exactly. That was the amazing Grace Jones doing William's Blood. That was a fairly recent album that she did. The album was called Hurricane, only about three or four years ago, and it had pretty big success, and that's a great track from it. That was the single from it at the time.
Yes, so. And you were giving me a little bit of a lesson about Grace Jones.
Yeah. Yeah, Keith Haring, the graffiti artist, she collaborated with him a bit with one of her videos, Slave to the Rhythm, which was one of her big hits, and you know, a bit of a very much a fashion icon. Unbelievably hard work, really, really a difficult person, but that's what makes her so interesting, I suppose. Yeah, and she still performs around the world now. Of course, she was in one of the James Bond films, and so she's covered a lot in her very colourful life. Now, we're going to get straight stuck into film.
Yes, why not? Now, I got to speak with Reece Graham, yep. Writer-director of Galore, the new Aussie film.
Now,
out at the
we
moment.
Spoke about that. Was it last
we
week?
We did. I did a review, but yep. then I actually got to speak with them.
Right.
So, and he also brought along his two of his stars, Lily Sullivan, who plays Laura, and Toby Wallace, who plays Denny.
Right. Did you want to give us a bit of a rundown what the film's about?
Yeah. So basically, it's set in 2003. I think we were talking about how, you know, films set in the past have sort of a different kind of feel to them. And
yep.
Basically, it's a made-up story. It's a narrative story, but set around real events, which are the 2003 fires that hit
Canberra.
Oh, the
bushfires? Yeah.
Yeah.
They were pretty shocking. I know.
Exactly. They really were. And so it does add another dimension to the film.
Okay, so that was being played in the background,
yeah,
as this story was going on.
Yeah, kind of an impending doom.
Yep.
You know, that sort of frames this love story between essentially three people. So
okay.
So it's basically two best friends.
Yeah.
And
a three-way? Is that what you're talking about?
Essentially, David, okay. But they just don't... Well, one, the girlfriend doesn't realise it.
Okay, so she's having it... Oh, is the two boys having...
No.
Oh, I'm going to tell
no,
you the wrong direction.
No, you're going into fantasy land there, David. no, the one of the girls is sleeping with her best friend's boyfriend.
Right.
Mm.
Okay.
So that's a big enough story, right. I think. But yes, I got to speak to the writer-director and his stars about the new film. You're on Joy 94.9, and I have the great pleasure of welcoming Reece Graham, the director, and stars Lily Sullivan and Toby Wallace from the new Aussie film Galore, a film that I really enjoyed. Thank you very much for joining me.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
As I said, I am really excited about seeing you guys because I love the film, which is always a great start when I'm interviewing someone. but I want to know first, Reece, where did the idea for the film come from?
It was a bit of a combination of a few passions. I had started writing a story about this young character who becomes Billy in the film ultimately, and I was curious about a young woman who, you know, has got a really good heart. She's incredibly adoring of her best friend, but she kind of makes lots of bad decisions in the pursuit of love and desire, like we all do. And I wanted to make a film that was about being young, that kind of had the complexity that I remember about relationships at that time. I think that so often films about being 16, 17 can really oversimplify the experience. And in fact, you can have really adult complex relationships, and you know, you have all the same sort of ideas of loyalty, desire, how to stay true to yourself that you do as an adult. In fact, we probably get worse at it as we get older. But, so yeah, and you know, I guess, and as often happens with these things, that story and that character just morphed over time and, you know, became enmeshed in a bit of a narrative structure that ultimately became Galore.
And you've talked about previously about the fires and how they came in part of the story a little bit later.
Yes.
So how did that sort of happen then?
Well, it was actually, I mean, the fires that devastated that part of Canberra that I'd grown up in. That was in 2003. Mm. And I'd gone down there shortly after and made a short 16mm documentary interviewing a bunch of kids in the punk rock scene there who had all lost their houses. And what I found really interesting at the time was that they were stressed a bit, I guess, about the devastation of their suburbs, but they were suddenly just reevaluating their friendships and their relationships. They realised that that was the thing that really mattered. And that came back to me when I was redrafting a few years later. I was looking at Galore and feeling like I wanted to place it in a much realer sense of the world. And I guess I came up with this narrative device of just saying, well, let's set it in the month prior to those bushfires and make this a very real experience in a real world for these characters.
Well, that's what I want to touch on essentially, is that realistic aspect, and it definitely comes through in the film as a viewer. I want to bring you guys in. Lily, how did Reese bring you into it and get you right there in the moment?
I think a really special part of this project was the rehearsal process. We had a week in Melbourne and 2 weeks in Canberra where Reese left us to our own devices, gave us all a bike each, just, yeah, actually to embrace the lifestyle and the rural kind of outskirts, restless sort of isolation and beautiful landscapes and hot weather. And it was, I think, the ultimate dream for an actor in sort of any kind of preparation, and to get to know each other and actually, yeah, just live that world, that warped reality that, you know, Canberra kind of, and also just even country kind of, yeah, rural sort of situations, which I think, like, fundamentally the emotions and the situations are universal, but those elements of living, you know, in the outskirts also play a huge part in how magnified, you know, the characters' emotions are and the situations and how intense.
Toby, was that a great process for you as well, having that rehearsal before getting into filming?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It was really cool, though, when we came to Canberra, because Reese was basically like, this is it. This is where I grew up.
Just down that
welcome.
Street. Yeah.
And, but yeah, we would walk around and do activities and things and in the town, Tuggeranong, and that was really fun. And basically, like, instantly we started forming, like, the dynamics from the character and the script. And it was really, really good to be able to hang out and
in the houses.
Yeah. And my character was a skater dude, so I was down the skate park quite a bit and meeting kids from the town. And that was, it all forms the kind of integral stages of your character.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9. Now, we've heard part one.
That's part one
of the interview. Yes. Now, I was going to play a song there, but I reckon we should go straight into part two.
Why not?
Of the interview.
We got into a really nice discussion. Somehow I had about 20, 25 minutes worth of material. I cut it down to about 9 minutes. So why don't we get into the second part of it? Director Reese Graham and stars Lily Sullivan and Toby Wallace here on Joy 94.9.
What I do love about it is the strong female characters. Is that something that you were conscious about, Reese, or through the writing process and the directing process?
I wasn't conscious of it. I don't think. I think that I'm certainly being asked about it a lot, and so I'm having to think about it a lot more. But but I mean, I'm always interested in writing from a character point of view. So really, that world grew out of writing about the character and where I grew up and the people I grew up around. You know, it wasn't really. I didn't grow up in a guy's world, and I didn't. My closest friends were female, and they were kind of not dissimilar to the kind of characters that Billy and Laura were. You know, they're these kind of like reckless girls who didn't, you know, kind of feared nothing and were kicking out against things. So, but I think that it is never a conscious decision to say I wanted to write about young women. It was just this thing of like, I love this young character. And maybe if I'd made it a young boy, it would have created a whole lot of sets of different expectations for the film. But for me, you know, all of the things that create who these two characters are defined by the kind of the qualities that you give them. And those are human qualities rather than gender qualities. But it has been interesting listening to the response of people, and particularly some of your older audiences are very critical of Billy in a way that I think is really quite funny, because I think that we've talked about it a lot, where you kind of go, if it was a young male character, I actually think the kind of the character criticisms would be totally absent.
Yeah.
But somehow, because she's a young woman, people are kind of like, oh, she's, you you know, I'm worried that what she's doing is unlikable, or it's like wow, well, it's just
I'm like, I'm pretty sure a lot of people do things that I think are unlikable.
Yeah, and particularly on film. I mean, most film heroes, like the central characters, it's dramas defined by people doing things that are generally going against the flow.
Or ultimately sabotaging themselves.
Yes.
Sorry, my life.
I just want to talk about the opening shot of the film. Mm. Stunning. It's kind of surreal and beautiful. Why that particular scene, and I hope I'm not ruining it, but it's a scene between Billy and Toby's character. Mm. Why start the film with that?
Well, I think it's, you know, the film is obviously about intimacy and different kinds of intimacy, and it's we wanted the audience to have a very sensory experience of the film. We wanted it to feel like you were, you know, claustrophobically close to Billy and her experiences all the time, because she sort of so burrows in. Like when she's with Danny, she's completely immersed in him. When she's with Laura, she's completely immersed in her. And we wanted to immerse the audience in their relationship. And so the reason we placed the you know, the viewer inside the car with these two young lovers, you know, they've just sort of finished doing what they're doing, and they're kind of lying around, and you sort of see the bodies inverted, and there's this sort of beautiful kind of visual dance between the way they kind of look at each other. A lot of that stuff just happened as Ashley and Toby kind of, you know, worked out what felt natural and what they would do. But a lot of it was wanting to create a slightly dreamlike sense of how intensely beautiful and strange it is when you have that love and desire for the first time. And, you know, that doesn't go away, but it's, yeah, that was very much a part of it.
Now, Galore has been received very well by critics, by audiences.
Quite divisively, actually. We've been quite surprised by there's been some really, really negative responses and some really beautifully positive responses, which has been kind of, it's weird. Initially, I was quite surprised, but now I'm kind of excited about it.
Mm.
I like it.
I suppose a lot of the greatest films are divisive in a way.
Yeah, well, I think it's also that thing of there's something about the intense intimacy of the film that you respond to and become enmeshed in, or perhaps it, you know, you don't respond to, and therefore it can push you outside of that intimate circle. So
yeah.
But we're so excited by it. We've been getting like a really, really positive response from younger audiences, which has been sensational. You know, like, that's so exciting.
The film is released in Australia now, but do you plan on travelling it around the world again?
Well, we did a very epic journey. We premiered the film internationally in Berlin at the Berlin Film Festival recently, and we did a little possible campaign to get the four key cast members over there. So we went over on a little Euro tour for a few weeks, which I think...
Latching.
But no, look, we hope that the film continues to have a life and travels. And the beautiful thing you find also is that films about younger characters, they can connect really well across cultures. I mean, those experiences of growing up are somehow just as true in Iran and the UK and the Philippines. You know, like, it's the discovery of what it means to be an adult experiencing love and loss and sex for the first time are fairly universal. So to be able to throw that into the world is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and we found that in Berlin. That was the first moment where we're like, oh, is this going to be lost in translation? Great. But all these young people were just coming up to us and curious, obviously, about the landscapes and the energy of the world of Tuggeranong in Canberra. But apart from that, every other question was directed through the impulses of your character, like what, why, how.
Yeah,
well, thank you very much, Rhys Graham, director of Galore, and the gorgeous stars Lily Sullivan and Toby Wallace. Thank you so much for joining
us.
Thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine. Brendan, who was that?
That was my little input for the day. That was Lana Del Rey.
Right. Doing the classic song.
Doing the classic remake of Blue Velvet off the Paradise edition of Born to Die, her album from 2012.
A beautiful round. And your interview just then was fantastic too.
Thank you, David.
Excellent.
I really did have a ball with that one, actually.
Yeah, and you were saying that you had a lot of information, you had to cut it down.
I did, and there was a particularly funny bit, if I do same for myself, where I questioned Toby about his co-starring with Bindi Irwin.
Right. Okay.
And so I asked him how Lily compared to Bindi, and he had some kind words to say about Lily, at least.
Now, we're going to move away from film, and we're getting into the wonderful world of... Look, I've been to so many over the years, a night at the prom style, and it's the best fun you can have. And I was trying to explain to you, wasn't I, before about it. And this one's called The Best of British. It's by the Heidelberg Symphony Orchestra with the Aston Smith Singers. And we've got Julie Danaher here, who's a principal flautist. So welcome.
Thank you very much, David. It's great to be here.
So tell us a bit of the history of the orchestra.
Okay, so the Heidelberg Symphony Orchestra started life as the Heidelberg Youth Orchestra, and it's based in Ivanhoe.
Right.
And as those original members got a bit older, they didn't want to leave, so we became the Heidelberg Symphony Orchestra.
So how long have you been involved?
I've personally been involved for 13 years
now. Wow, that's fantastic.
But I was just doing a little tally in my head, and I was thinking out of the woodwind section, I think we could probably tally up over 100 years. we're not all that old, I should add. But it does tend to attract people, and we just love it, and we just want to play and stay, and we have a lot of fun together.
Well, because it would be hard, unless you're in one of the major orchestras in town, what do you do?
That's right. That's absolutely right. And a lot of people, as they finish their uni degree, like I did, I finished my Bachelor of Music, and I do work as a freelance musician, and I teach as well, as a lot of us do. But where do you play if you don't get into the MSO or Orchestra Victoria and you're not ready to go overseas and pursue it there? There's these avenues like the Heidelberg Symphony Orchestra.
Right.
And there are also players who haven't necessarily studied music but love playing their instrument. So we come from all walks of life.
Yep.
and we play together.
Right. And you were saying before that you do two major productions each year?
We do four, actually.
Four? Right.
Yeah, we do four each year that basically coincide with the end of the school term.
Right.
And for two of those, they are a little bit bigger because we do the Saturday night and the Sunday afternoon concert.
Right.
As well.
And you know, this one's the best of British, and we'll get into it a little bit later. But tell us some of the other stuff you've done over the years.
Well, we've been lucky enough to have some amazing soloists over the years. Our next concert's with Benjamin Martin, who's a great Australian pianist. And our soloist in residence is Natsuko Yoshimoto, who is one of Australia's, or she's world-renowned violinist, and she plays with us every year. We just love her to bits, and she plays with us every year and does a major concerto.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what does it mean to you, apart from the fact that you're playing in an orchestra, but it must be a real community for you if you've been involved that long.
It is. It's wonderful, and it's one of the things that I love the most about it, and I know other people I've spoken to in the orchestra enjoy the most is that it is like a big family. And my one of the other flute players, Todd, who I refer to affectionately as my flute husband, because I spend 3 hours a week with him, and that's been that way for 13 years.
Right.
And we see each other. It was the only thing I did after I had twins 5 years ago, and it was the only commitment I went back to doing was playing in the orchestra, because I just needed that outlet. But everyone knew about that, and everyone's supportive, and it is a real family. And
and
I think people see that when they come and see us, that
Excellent.
There's a lot of laughs and a lot of love there too.
Good.
Yeah, well, along those lines, are you really supportive of the younger generation coming through?
Absolutely.
Or are you trying to kick them to the background so that you don't lose your position?
Yeah, flute players don't. No. Actually, one of the other flute players, or she's playing piccolo with us, is actually one of my ex-students who I taught a few years ago.
Lovely.
And so we very much encourage younger players to come along, and especially string players. We always need more string players.
Yep.
And there's always, opportunities for more players, and if one of us can't do a concert, so we love seeing new players and younger. The younger generation, absolutely.
Oh, that's fantastic. You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
And you are on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine, with Brendan and David, and our very special guest in the studio now, Julie from Heidelberg Symphony Orchestra. Now, tell us about your production that is happening next week.
It is. It's this Saturday night, the 28th of June, and that's at 8 o'clock. And the following day, on the Sunday, the 29th, we're doing it all again at 2:30.
Yep.
And it's, as you were saying in your introduction, it's a last night of the prom-style concert. So we've got a few solely orchestral numbers. So big favourites like Hulse Jupiter from the Planets, which is fantastic, and that involves the whole orchestra. That's right. A really big work. And Irish Symphony by Harty. And then the choir is going to join us for the rousing prom style, you know, pomp and circumstance. Yep. And Zadok the priest and yeah. and the and we're also doing a James Bond
I was
going to
mention that. which one?
Well, it's actually a medley of all.
It's okay.
It's yeah, we're loving it because we get to play with drum kit and bass. It's really exciting for orchestral yeah. members.
Because the wonderful thing about a prom style is that it is just all about fun, having fun, the beautiful music, but everyone's enjoying it. You know, exactly. Like it's not serious.
No, you're allowed to, you know, cheer and sing along and
bring
actively
a flag.
Encourage. Oh, yeah, please bring flags. But we have also we have several hundred flags ready to go, and we've got bunting and flags,
fantastic.
The whole nine yards. Yeah.
Is it as much for you guys as it is for the audience?
Yeah, we were trying to decide who's going to have more fun. Actually,
yeah.
I'm pushing for the percussionists to be wearing Union Jack waistcoats, but we'll see if that happens.
Oh, that's good. Now, it's really important that we as a community support this orchestra because, you know, like you're doing a wonderful job and, you know, like you're not professional players and it's events like this that actually brings the money in for you, isn't it?
That's right. This is these two middle of the year concerts are the ones that really determine what we can perform next year because the higher fees alone for the music can run into, well, last year there was one concert that ran over $1,000.
Wow.
And for basically a not-for-profit community organisation, that's a lot of money.
It certainly is, yeah.
Yeah, if we can really get good attendance at these next weekend's concerts, then we'll be wrapped.
Okay.
Absolutely
wrapped. Now, where are you performing?
We're performing at the Ivanhoe Girls Grammar School Performing Arts Centre, which
yep.
is on Upper Heidelberg Road in Ivanhoe. And bookings can be made either via our website, which is www.heidelbergsymphony.com.au, or the booking number, which is 9005.
Oh, people won't remember that. No. They'll go. It's
just
too
find
hard
us on
if
the
you're
web.
Driving a car.
That's
yeah.
it. And we're on Twitter and Facebook as well. You
right.
can find us there.
Oh, look at you. You're so modern.
Oh, yeah, I know. We're embracing all the new technology.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming in. We'd love to get you back your next
I'd
season
love
as
to.
Well.
Thank you very much for your support.
No, our pleasure. And so it's next Saturday night.
That's right.
And Sunday afternoon.
And Sunday afternoon.
Go to the Heidelberg Symphony Orchestra website.
Yes.
Or Facebook page.
Yes, that's correct.
All right. Thank you.
Terrific. Thank you.
You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine with Brendan and David. That was, of course, The Massive Attack. One of my all-time favourite albums, this one, Brendan.
Mm.
Yeah, it's and that was Unfinished Symphony, of course. Now, we're going on to a new segment. So we've got our guinea pig here.
We've got it all covered today.
We have. So we're going to look, it might not be every week, but it will be every now and then. We're going to have a feature artist.
Mm.
And today we're doing sculptor Frederick White. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, David.
Now, give us a bit of a background. You know, like sculpture, it's a very hard, very challenging. You're very industrial with the look that you work on, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's not exactly a commercial kind of look, the artwork that I make.
Yep.
But I've been practicing for 25 years and have always had an ongoing connection with my art practice, and even if I'm working on other artists' work, which I've done a lot of in the past on big public sculpture commissions,
yep.
and my own sculpture commissions that I've had over the years as well.
Yeah,
it's just maintaining, you know, the language of what it is that you do and always sort of trying to push that forward.
Right. So how did you get interested in this back, you know, when you studied it? You know, like why sculpture and why this particular style?
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I suppose I suffered a lot of loss in my earlier life. My mother died when I was 13 and my sister died in 2000. And I suppose my work kind of grew out of that, like as a kind of meditation on mortality is how I describe it. So I guess because of that, you know, my practice has not been afraid to sort of go aesthetically where a lot of artists are a little afraid to go.
Yeah.
You know, so I sort of know that we're only here for a short time, and I try and make really succinct what it is that I'm saying in my work.
Right. Mm. But and you've done some pretty powerful stuff. You know, like going to your website, there's a great shot of a piece that you had at, in Bondi Beach.
Yeah.
Was that for their sculpture exhibition a few years
back? I've been up in Sculpture by the Sea a couple of times. In that one was 2005.
Right.
And that was a cast iron sculpture, 3 meters high, and takes the shape of a water droplet sort of shape with a big plumbing fitting at the bottom of it that has a real direct connection to the ground.
Okay.
So it's sort of, you know, talking about how the flow of water through the pipe, how it sort of mirrors our life's journey, perhaps.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Now, just getting it up there would be a challenge, wouldn't it?
You know, that's right.
That's the thing with sculptures and entering in competitions and stuff, is that the physical cost of transporting it alone.
Yeah, that's right. I was in the Lawn Sculpture Prize earlier this year.
Yep.
And did a 7.5 metre long sculpture. So that was transported on a flatbed semi-trailer. And luckily, a friend, Marty's sister, owns a trucking company. So I got a very good mates rate deal and got it down there each way for $700.
Right. So, okay, but that's still a big commitment on top of everything else, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's right. And I hired a space down on the Maribyrnong River to build that work as well.
Right.
Down at the Living Museum of the West, which is a magical space to work in. Fantastic. Yeah.
Now, do you collaborate? You were saying that you help other sculptors. Yeah, like, is it one of that part of the world where you all band together and there's a real sort of community and you go and see how other people are working? Or is it, are you very isolated in your approach to your own work?
I'm fairly isolated in my approach to my own work, and yeah, I guess so. But I have been in various shared studios over the years, and that's a great way to sort of interact with other artists and be inspired by their opinions and what they think. And it is great, always great to have another opinion about what you're doing. Nobody totally works in isolation, I don't think.
No. And it's a tough world, though, isn't it, being an artist? Because, you know, like, and what you're doing isn't the norm. So it's applying for grants a lot of the time. It's, you know, trying to get commissions. You know, like, how do you find that? You know, like, it must be a drain on your life where, apart from being creative, you've also got to think of where the next dollar's going to come from.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the reason why I have worked on a lot of big public sculpture commissions for other artists. And, you know, I find that really rewarding and feel very privileged that I've been able to stay within the field of sculpture to earn money and to not dilute what it is that I'm trying to say with my own work because of money.
Yep.
So that's been a really big thing for me. You know, it's like I'm not totally in the marketplace like a lot of other artists and sculptors.
Yeah.
And, you know, I admire them as well, but, you know, they're incredibly hard people and tough, really, really tough people. And, you know, I don't always like what they produce, you know, it's because it is very commercial.
Yeah, of course. You know? So have you got a dream? What's your big dream? You know, like, where would you like one of your pieces to be sitting? What, you know, like in your old age, you know, like, it's sort of, oh, you know, I've got a piece here. Like those beautiful waves at the Art Centre, which, you know, like we see them, well, you know, like almost daily if you're coming up St Kilda Road. You know, do you want a piece like that one day? And where would you like it?
Yeah, it'd be great to have a piece in the inner city in Melbourne somewhere, but yeah, to be in maybe more of a natural location that had some sort of connection to water. I'm not sure that it would be right in the city itself. Like, for me, Docklands has already got too many pieces. It's looking a little bit sort of like a, I don't know how I would describe it. But
well, I think they're trying so hard to make it as if it's a livable place that they're just shoving a sculpture. Actually, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I've thought that a lot of times where you think, there is a little bit too much down here.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a wasted opportunity architecturally for me, the Docklands area. But, you know, throwing public sculpture at it, I'm not sure if that's the answer. But
Do you think there's room here in the a city as like Melbourne, where we love our arts and we support it, and there's great little pieces around the city. Do you think there's room for a lot more?
Well, I mean, my works, I suppose, like, they have a really message about our connection to the earth and each other. And that's front and centre with me of why I make art. And for me, a lot of those works, like Lobby Plop, you know, that you can just plonk somewhere, don't really have any kind of like context of what they're saying. But there's always new pieces popping up that do have that, you know, like, for instance, Richard Stringer's Bees down on the building down there.
The Rialto.
They're
awesome.
The fantastic, fantastic work. You know, it works really well.
Yeah, every time I see it, because it's not in an obvious place as well. Mm. You've got to almost go, you know, like over to get closer to the building to see them, don't you?
Yeah.
And it's at the back of the building, which is the other interesting side.
And I love some of those old 50s bronze sculptures and pieces that were part of, you know, our architectural language from when we were kids, you know, that are still there, and still finding some of those in the city is still fantastic.
And speaking of bronze, you know, you do work with a number of different materials. Is there one that you haven't worked with that you would love to?
Okay. I still haven't ventured into stainless steel so much. Because it is kind of like a very corporate sort of metal material.
Yeah, the minute you mentioned that, I thought, oh, that's
polish, and, you know. So, yeah, I sort of shied away from that a little bit, but it is a beautiful material and really hard wearing for marine environments and has a practical application. So,
do you get frustrated with the material sometimes when it doesn't do what you want it to do?
Well, I've been working with aluminium pipe in the last few years quite a bit, and it's a really difficult material to weld with. Just the way it responds to the welding machine, it's a very soft metal, so it fouls up in the welding machine all the time. So you're sort of stopping and starting a lot. It's very difficult to work with.
Yeah. When you were a kid growing up, would you look at it, you know, like, did you find that, looking back on yourself now, that you would look at a statue and or a piece of sculpture somewhere and go, and analyse it? Have you looked at yourself in that respect?
Yeah, well, I used to come into town a lot. My dad grew up in Dudley Street, so he was an inner city man.
Yep.
And he used to bring, every weekend, he'd bring us in to do something in the city, go to Vic Market or just do something around the place. So we were always sort of traipsing through the laneways, the bluestone laneways of Melbourne, and seeing bits and pieces here and there. And, you know, just, yeah, it's always been part of my language from early on. Mm.
So one dream? Is there one dream that you've got or not?
I feel like I've fulfilled that in some ways, David. Yeah. And anything else that I have on top of that is for me a bonus. In 2007, I did a big 5.5 metre high piece in Western Australia commission, a $90,000 commission, and that work kind of said everything for the last 20 years that I ever wanted to say about work, about my work.
Yeah.
And I said to everyone, anything else that I get after this is just like a bonus.
Okay.
You know? So, and last year, in January, I won the Montalto Winery Sculpture Prize, so I won a $30,000 art prize. And
that must be so exciting.
It was so incredible. Yeah. It was such an incredible feeling to win something like that, you know.
Right.
And I've got a piece in a permanent collection in Victoria now, so even though it's not the CBD, I still have something that's representative of everything that I'm trying to say. Yeah. So
you really have achieved a lot, haven't you?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Good on you.
Yeah.
Good on you.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
And we'd love to keep in touch with you and when you've got something else coming along, come in and we'll have a chat about it.
Oh, and good on you for, you know, sort of putting the art, getting the artist to put it out there and sort of delve into some of the darker sides of why artists do things.
Yeah,
I think that's very cool.
Exactly. Yeah. Our pleasure. Mm. Frederick White, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLB TIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine with Brendan and David. And, of course, that was the amazing Blur. You know, they've gone a bit quiet over the last few years, but then again, Damien from the band is in a band as well called...
The Gorillaz.
Yeah, so he's been a busy boy over the years. And their music is was all very much part of that Brit pop sensation around Oasis time. But Blur were a lot more poppier, a lot more... They're fun with their lyrics. And as Damien said at one stage, he said, oh, one day I'm going to write a musical because my music is very much that way. I tell little stories in each song and they're a little bit tongue-in-cheek and they're, and they sound like this if they should be in a musical, which is good.
Yeah, he's very, very talented, that man. Because I think he's done a lot of soundtrack work as well.
Oh, has he?
Sure, in films.
Right.
There comes my film knowledge again. But, yeah, I can imagine definitely a musical from that. But in hindsight, I think, you know, the rivalry between the two bands, I'm pretty sure Blur has come out on top, really.
I think Oasis won in the record sales.
At the time, course, yeah.
But, yeah, Blur, they're very much the arty and more interesting band where... And those Gallagher brothers, not very nice. Now, talking about film, let's talk a bit more about
so
film.
So I saw an interesting little film where we were discussing it, we'll preview it last week, Under the Skin with the lovely Scarlett Johansson.
Mm.
So I got to see that one.
Oh, okay.
A little crowd up at Nova, and I really, really liked it, but it definitely, it was even more sort of... art house than I was even expecting, to be honest, Dave.
Oh, okay.
It was very sort of experimental and, a lot of things going on. So I was definitely glued to the screen and Scarlett was very, very enigmatic in the role. But what I found out afterwards, I had an inkling, but I read a little bit of information about it afterwards because she basically, a lot of the film is her driving around in a van and picking up men.
And she's an alien.
She is an alien.
Yeah.
And, you know, she does her things with them.
And kills them.
Well, yeah, she doesn't have sex with them. She sort of lures them.
Oh, so they think they're
going to
have...
They think they're going to.
Okay.
But here's the interesting thing. I think it was most of the footage of her picking up men, they were actually real people. So real people just off the street.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
As far as the...
And the hidden cameras.
Yeah, I don't know how they pulled that off, but because it's not shaky cam or anything. It's you know, very nice... Nicely shot, nicely sort of...
Wow.
So, yeah, it was actually just her trawling the streets, picking up guys. So I thought that was incredible. It
goes to show you she must be a very good actress to be able to, to do that and to have the balls to do it as well.
definitely. So apparently there was like a very, obviously, skeleton crew in the car or in the van filming. But, yeah, so all those reaction shots that she gets of picking up the guys and... Basically them saying, oh, you know, you're all right. And that's all real. But then there's scenes afterwards where she's...
And that would be that would be actors they then use.
Well, it's the same people. So maybe they, you know, coerced them after the fact that, oh, well, do you actually want to star in this film?
Yeah.
And then got them to shoot other
more
stylized.
Right.
Very, very stylized scenes after the fact. So, so basically I've gone off track a little bit, but beautiful film. Not for everyone. I'll put it out there. If you're looking for sort of a fast-paced film, definitely not. Not your thing. Sort of slow, steady, methodical, and very mysterious. Not a lot of answers are given. There's not a backstory about why, how she's an alien, how she got here. She's just here. She's doing her thing on Earth. So, you know, let Scarlett do her thing as an alien. Yeah, I won't talk about the ending, but nothing's really wrapped up in the end. But
okay.
I think I like it that way, to be honest.
Okay.
Very ambiguous. So that was that one. And I also got to see The Volcano. I don't know if I'm going to try and pronounce this. This is the original name. Do you remember the volcano that erupted in Europe a few years ago?
Yeah. About what country?
I can't even remember. Iceland.
Of course I do.
That thing. Yes. Try and pronounce that, David.
No. Well, Icelandic.
That was the original, the name of the volcano, but they've, and so the film was actually titled that. So I'm glad for the Australian release, they've actually just chosen The Volcano.
And so what's it about?
It's a sort of slapdash comedy road trip kind of film. It's basically husband and wife that have since divorced have to travel to their daughter's wedding together.
In Iceland?
Actually in Greece. But
right.
The Iceland volcano has
disturbed all the travel.
So, it's a bit of a silly setup.
Right, okay.
But, essentially them travelling by car and all these other methods to try and get to this wedding in Greece.
Oh, okay. So, in a way, it's a bit like that film you were talking about, the one in Canberra, about the Canberra fires, where there was the backdrop of the fires. This was the backdrop of the volcano.
Exactly. And instead of a dramatic element, it's sort of almost comedic. At least it sets up the comedy part of it.
Now, there's a fashion designer film that's happening.
There is. Yves Saint Laurent is doing... there is going to be a screening on Wednesday night up at Cinema Nova. So I've actually got tickets for that. So
right.
I'm very happy.
Well, a legendary designer. I saw the Valentino one a few years ago, which was pretty good. I wonder if it will follow the same sort of line or whether it will be very different.
Well, apparently it focuses on his relationship with his long-term boyfriend. So
right.
I think more of a human drama, but apparently the sets are amazing. So
okay.
I can't wait to just take in the lushness of it.
Right. Also, it's not a doco. It's actually a film about him.
It's a biography.
Oh, so, right. Okay. Different. So many films to see.
So many to see. Such little time, David.
Brendan, our time's up as well.
It is.
Yes. Been lovely chatting with you today.
It's been amazing.
And thank you to everyone out there listening. And we'll be back next week at 4 o'clock Sunday Arts Magazine. You're on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.